I was in a courtroom. I had been in jail and was being sentenced to how long I was going to be in jail. It's a big thing. It was actually when I had had an encounter with Jesus during that thing. And the judge, it was really weird because the judge let me out, which was crazy. It really was a miracle. And she said, this is a really risky thing that I'm doing, but what I'd like you to do, Danielle, is go be the leader you were meant to be.
Welcome to the Leadership Podcast. What does it mean to lead well in the 21st century? We speak to significant leaders from around the world to learn how to shift our leadership up a gear and become the leaders we're called to be. We learn from leaders from the creative industries, law, church, charities, and more as we seek to make a positive impact in the world. I'm Krish Kandaya, and today I'm speaking with Danielle Strickland. Danielle is an impactful leader who has experience in justice, movement building, leading and starting churches around the world and the charity sector. She has established brothel chaplaincy, street outreach networks and anti-human trafficking strategies. Her aggressive compassion has served people firsthand in countries all over the world. From establishing justice departments to creating new initiatives to mobilize people towards transformational living. Danielle trains, advocates, and inspires people to live differently. Danielle is the co-founder of InfinitumLife.com, a site that provides daily tools and guides for followers of Jesus. Brave Global, a movement that empowers and encourages girls at risk of human trafficking. And Amplify Peace, a global effort dedicated to inspiring women as peacemakers. She has written many books, including The Zombie Gospel and The Ultimate Exodus. Danielle, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining the Leadership Podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, actually. Thanks for asking. And it's an honor to be with you. I always love talking to you, Krish.
Oh, you're so kind. Well, this podcast is all about trying to help people make a shift in their leadership that they might have been either not assuming that they are a leader and they need to recognize how to step into that, or it could be they've kind of peaked and plateaued and they want to kind of reach the next level. So that's where we're going. And we've got people from all around the world listening. The podcast has been hosted by World Vision because they're very passionate about raising up leaders from across churches and other agencies to be able to help the poor. And I know that's something that you're very passionate about. Mm-hmm. But would you help me understand a little bit of your leadership journey? How did you first know that you were a leader? Did someone spot that in you and encourage you? How did it begin?
You know, I think for me, it was probably started in a negative sense in that I was always the instigator of trouble. And so I always sort of joke around that I would be leading no matter what I was doing, even in whatever direction I'm going in. So I think there were some just natural, maybe some natural personality things, just some natural abilities that were always sort of present to mobilize people to do something.
So your leadership gifting was part of your personality and character right at the beginning. You say you led people into trouble. Tell us a little bit about what that meant.
Well, I was always the ringleader, you know, so if there was a group of people that were contemplating we should sneak out at camp or, you know, we should go do something bad, I would always be the one like, yeah, let's do that. And then kind of lead the pack in terms of how we were going to do it and also leading them by example. You know, those are a couple. It gets worse than that, of course, but we don't have to go into those details.
Sure.
The worst of it, I was in a courtroom. I had been in jail and was being sentenced to how long I was going to be in jail. It's a big thing. It was actually when I had an encounter with Jesus during that thing. And the judge, it was really weird, but my mom wrote it down because the judge let me out, which was crazy. It really was a miracle. And she said, she didn't let me out, but she let me out of jail and into a drug treatment center is where I went. And she gave me like 3 years of probation. So I had like a curfew for 3 years. Wow. And all sorts of conditions of what I could do and couldn't do, but it did keep me out of jail. And in the court, she said, this is a really risky thing that I'm doing, but what I'd like you to do, Danielle, and she looked at me and said, is go be the leader you were meant to be.
Wow.
Now, I don't remember that. My mom wrote it down though, because she was like, did she just say... go be the leader you were meant, you know, so that's a fascinating kind of prophetic calling in a sense of a judge in a courtroom saying this isn't supposed to be
so
like
good.
This.
Wow. I'm thinking about that at a number of levels. Firstly, in that moment, that judge having such vision and just a passion for encouragement. Often when you have contact with the criminal justice system, it feels very procedural. You're an object that's being kind of moved along a kind of conveyor belt and people are just ticking boxes. But here's someone that kind of saw some humanity in you, some treasure in you, and wanted to kind of call that out. What a lovely picture of the judicial system. And I find that quite inspiring.
Yeah, I mean, I also think as a leader, one of the things that sets you apart is that you're able to spot qualities in people and call them out. So I think that's, I mean, for her as a leader, an obvious leader, to be able to say, okay, this is confusing, you know, some of, and I think even with children.
Yeah.
And I think with everyone that we participated, and mine's an extreme example of like drugs in jail. Like there were a lot of things that were covering up or distorting my leadership qualities. But I think even in kids that are difficult sometimes, we're just prone to sort of go, oh, they're just difficult, instead of looking a little further and saying, oh, wait a minute, there are some things going on in this kid that are going to serve him or her really well later. We can uncover them and identify them. And so that's part of the work, I think, of leadership is to, and I think most, I would imagine most leaders, I mean, you'll know better than me through this podcast, but most leaders would have had somebody identify people early on, you know, like just identify to say, oh, wait, I see something in you, you know, and sometimes we don't see it in ourselves. So we really need the assistance of others.
That's right. No, I'm totally with you about how we see people differently. I think that is one of the key callings of a leader. I'm just so excited it was a judge that played that role for you. But some people would say that leadership gifts are something that God might give after you become a Christian. So, for example, I don't know, Peter in the Bible doesn't seem to be much of a leader when Jesus first encounters him. But through his connection with Jesus, those leadership gifts emerge. Or think of Moses, you know, he doesn't want to lead. He wants Aaron, his brother, to go and do the leading. And yet somehow it was the interaction with God that changed that. But in your experience, your leadership gifts were there before you became a Christian, and God kind of redeemed them and called them out in you. So do you think it's just different for different people?
Well, you know, this is your theologian coming out in you, Krish, but I believe that all the gifts are given freely and are never taken back. You know, I think a lot of really disturbed rock stars are actually gifted worship leaders, probably, that the enemy's distorted.
Nice.
You know, with these laden gifts that God's just given freely. And then I think there is also the work of the Holy Spirit that happens inside that maybe even refines, probably the wrong word, but uncovers the truest part of the gift.
Yeah.
So I think in some level, everybody's walking around with all these beautiful gifts, creativities and artists and rock. Those are all freely given by God. Those are all beautiful gifts that God gives. And that's, I think we can celebrate that whenever we see that. But I think underneath, there's a distortion, you know, there's a distortion of those gifts for selfishness or for greed or for, you know, destruction. And it's mingled with pain and oppression and fear, you know, all of those things. And so what God does when Jesus comes in and the Holy Spirit comes into my life is he clears away all of that debris, begins to unlayer all of those other things. And I think that this is a lifetime work where he is sharpening and refining and purifying those original gifts that are so beautiful. John Foreman has this song that says all of God's children are shining underneath.
Nice.
And I love it. Just the image of God, and we're imagers of God, and God is a creative, beautiful, generous, gifted.
That's so good.
So I think all that is laden, but I would also say, and I think this is true of all sort of skills, that there are people that are gifted in specific, like, they have a lot of gift that they're called to this specific thing. They're gifted for this calling. And I think there are people who are maybe not gifted for that calling, but still are able to lead and get better and lead well. Just like I would say in Christianity, everybody's called to evangelize.
Yes.
Absolutely everybody. But I would say that there are some people who are just meant, you know, they're made for the office of evangelists. You know, they're just, they have a special gift. And I would say both work. And I would say the same is true in leadership. There are some people that we just go, like when I went to Robben Island, I asked my prison guard, my previous former prisoner who was my guide, what made Nelson Mandela the leader in prison? You know, like he's just a prisoner like everybody else. And he just kind of looked at me like I was dumb, you know, and he just goes, I guess you have to ask God. Like,
good answer.
But he's like, I guarantee you that I didn't, nobody else did, but we all knew he was the leader, you know, like there was no election in prison. He's just gifted with leadership. It's what he was meant to do. But I think everybody needs to lead. So I think those two are true at the same time.
Yeah, I like that. I like that John Foreman idea that we're all shiny underneath, and the becoming a Christian is revealing treasure that's already there. It makes me think about an antiques restorer, you know, someone who finds a masterpiece and it's all dirty and dusty, but it then gets cleaned up and becomes what it's supposed to be. And again, that echoes that idea that your judge had to you know, become the leader that you were born to be. I love that. It's such a bigger picture of what it means to become a Christian than many people assume. They think it's just changing the destination of where you're going to go when you die, but actually it's changing your vocation, or it's releasing the vocation that you've always had, the person you were born to be. But what about leadership development then? If you had these gifts early in your life, other people spotted them, when you became a Christian, you wanted to kind of use those skills for good. But how do we grow as leaders? Are these gifts, do they need to be honed and shaped? What are some of the things that have helped you grow as a leader?
Yeah, I think absolutely. If you've been given a gift, then you want to use it well, and you need some help to do that. And I think for me, probably one of the greatest teachers, to be honest, is experience, just doing it, just getting to it, like just learning how by doing it myself. And then I did have some folks along the way, more sort of mentors who again would remind me and call me out, maybe defend me, because you know, when you're doing it, you don't always do it right or super well. And so some people would come along and say, hey, you know, that's probably not the best thing, but I see what you were doing there, and I affirm that, you know. Romans 12, you know, it says, if you have this gift, whatever this gift is, then use it and use it fully. And I think leadership is one of those things too. If you have the gift of leadership, then use it well. So biographies were a big way that I learned how to lead. I looked at people that I admired and wanted to be more like, and wanted to discover sort of what they did and how they did it. And so I still read actually a lot of biographies of extraordinary people. And I find that to be kind of a mentoring type relationship. I love that. And then I found experience, like just learning from experience, but experience won't help you if you're not debriefing what's happening. I feel like the debrief is the key of experience.
Yes, yes. Do you do that with yourself, or do you have someone that you kind of bounce that back and forth with?
Yeah, so over the years, for my life, it's been weird to have a steady system, because I've done a lot of different things in a lot of different places.
Yes, yes.
So one of the pros of that is a lot of experience. One of the cons of that is that no steady people to travel with, because it's constantly changing. Now, this digital world has helped that a little bit. I've been able to stay in touch with some people. But usually what I would do is I would find those people that had the space or the time, and it wouldn't have been a formal mentorship. I never formalized it.
So I totally agree that experience is an amazing tutor for leadership. Just thinking back, I know you've had so many different contexts for leading, you know, as a pastor, as a justice campaigner, as a speaker. Can you give us some little cameos from the different areas of your life where you might have learned different things?
Yeah, I was actually sharing this with my friend the other day. I ran a thing called the War College, which was a training school, a discipleship training center, really around how to care for the urban poor. And I was doing a master's degree in leadership, actually, at the time. So it was a really fun discovery of leadership principles and things that I was learning sort of in this classroom, academic setting, and sort of bigger picture thing. And then with these, you know, mostly young adults trying to live a different way and sort of do this different cross-cultural kind of a ministry. And so I did a leadership class in that school. And what I did was I just divided everybody in groups. We just made a bunch of groups, and we brainstormed as a one big group areas of the city, areas of our specific area of the city that we would love to see changed, you know, and we brainstormed these specific things. And then I would say, okay, pick one each group, and then you've got this semester to do it. And then everybody would say, no, but like, how will we do it? And I was like, I don't know. Like, that's your job, you know? And they'd be like, but what, how will, like, who will, like, what will we use to do it? And I'm like, I don't know. That's going to be your job, you know? So I would watch this panicked group of people, you know, young adults who really didn't have that much experience.
Yeah.
And then they would begin to pray, and then they begin to brainstorm, and then we would debrief every day about what they had done and what the principles were that they were learning. So it was really fascinating. Like, wow, the area of the city that you want to see transformed, you know, strategy number one is to go to that area and pray, mm-hmm, right? Ask God to give you a vision, ask God to give, and then you're going to actually have to ask for some help. And what was really interesting is that you could see the dynamics of the group emerge, like the leader would naturally rise. So again, they would say, well, who's in charge? And I would be like, I have no idea. Like, not my job, you know? And just that whole, like, let them do it, you know? And nice. There were these beautiful projects that emerged. I mean, really beautiful. And some of them failed too. And then we would have a whole class on failure and how failure is such a great way of, right, of learning how to lead. So that was kind of one of my favorite experiments of creating. And some of the folks that led those small groups that did these transformational, you know, little things in the city have gone on to be beautiful leaders.
Amazing.
So that's also really fun to watch. And they'll say, you know, I remember back in that room when we were brainstorming how we were going to transform this skate park under a bridge, you know, in the downtown east side of Vancouver with five of us who were like young adults with no resource, what we were going to do. And it was just,
oh, I love it.
Yeah. And I think that kind of thing is, it was safe in that it was in the context of something larger. And so there was someone to come to. We could debrief those situations together and then just pick out the leadership lessons we were learning. But I also think we need more of those spaces in our lives. And sometimes we just let fear and we let those voices that say it can't be done just get in the way of us seeing and partnering really with God. So again, this isn't just using your natural leadership gift. This is a partnership with God, and God delights. And this is one of my favorite things about scripture. And even the judges, you know, they're all the wrong leaders. They're all the wrong leaders. I mean, they're left-handed. That's not right. They're female. That's not right. They're Nazarites. That's not right. You know, they're just all the wrong leaders. And God delights in using people in partnership with himself to do his work at his time.
That's so helpful. I like it. You're reminding me of lots of parts of the Bible. So at the end of Matthew's Gospel, the Great Commission, where they go to all the nations and make disciples, they've had very little experience in cross-cultural mission. It's all been in Israel, and yet off they go. And they planted churches, which kind of wasn't on the script already, right? That they had any experience in planting churches, but that's what they did. So this idea of just releasing people, putting people in a context and helping them to work it out, I love that. I guess the flip side that sometimes stops people from just going and doing is the fear they might cause more harm than good. And there have been experiences when well-meaning amateurs have gone out and, you know, I'm in the middle of this whole global conversation around orphanages, that Christians thought it would be a good idea to run orphanages. Well, why don't we stop and think, don't these kids have families? Haven't they got aunties and uncles? And we didn't listen well enough to the local people. We just kind of exported a lot of our ideas without listening. So somewhere between the paralysis of analysis, where you don't do anything until you've got all the answers, and the, I suppose, well-meaning amateurs causing more harm than good, there's a sweet spot. How do we get the right place for that so that we don't inhibit or we don't encourage people to be naive and a bit, I suppose, you know, the white savior complex?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really encouraged by this in some ways because I think, you know, what we always do is we do what we know.
Right.
And people forget that, you know, the orphanage scenario in the global world was people replicating what they had done in their world.
Exactly.
It's not like they were like, let's go do something we've never done, you know. And so in our own discovery, and I think this is part of our own discovery that, wow, this isn't good. This isn't working. You know, I don't even know if we would say it's not good. We would just say it's not working. The woman that actually introduced me to Jesus was a Salvation Army officer who spent her whole life running children's orphanages in Canada.
Oh, wow.
And I remember sitting down with her one day, this is years and years ago, sort of saying like, tell me more about why we stopped that. And also why we're not more engaged in the foster care system.
Right.
Because we used to run, like all across Canada, we ran orphanages. It was one of our go-to things. And then we shut them all down. Well, we actually turned them into different things. But, and she just said to me, Danielle, it didn't work. It didn't work. It didn't matter how godly I was. It didn't matter how good our staff was. It did not work. The stats are terrible. The situation's bad. Children should not be raised like that. And it was really interesting to me because I was also saying like, okay, so that didn't work. So what will work? You know, like, did we press into even some more things and stuff like that? So we just had this really dynamic conversation. And I thought, what a great leader. You know, because what happens is we get to a place as leaders where we're like, we've invested so much in thing that we're going to make it work. And we're just going to make this work. Cause, and I thought, wow, what an incredible leader to say, I've spent my whole life investing in this thing and it doesn't work. And I remember saying to her, like, do you regret like closing? Do you regret like your life's work closing down? And her saying, no, I've never been more happy.
Wow. Wow.
And that's, I think it's that when you know better, do better thing. And I think you can't know, you don't know what you don't know. So it's not like a plea for ignorance, like, so know less so that then you don't have responsibility for what you know.
Yeah.
It's not that, but it is, there is a measure of progress, you know, like we're figuring this out. And I think what we need, and again, this is where leadership comes in. And this is where I love what you're doing, Krish, and what Craig Greenfeld's doing in Cambodia and World Vision is trying to revisit all around the world, is this idea that this isn't working. And it takes a leader to, rather than prop up existing systems that you've invested in and sort of defend, you know, your territory and your funding scheme and all of those things, it takes a leader to say, this isn't good, this isn't working, this isn't the results, this isn't outcome driven. And to put the people, the children in this case, ahead of the program and the system that you know, that's good leadership. And I think people are afraid of that, but that's good leadership. And again, then you'll know there's a little bit of a scramble, because if this doesn't work, and that's where everybody goes into panic mode, well, this is what we've got. So what are we going to do? And that's where, you know, really good leaders, then again, we scramble again. We look at what's working right now. We look at maybe things no one has tried before.
That's right.
And we try to do that. I mean, you know, just some beautiful things around the world that people are looking at now that we know that this institutional response to poverty is not working. Beautiful leadership development there.
You're so right. This idea of sunk costs, you know, I've given so much of my life to this, I can't possibly change now. But the humility of leadership, I think that's got to be the key, isn't it? Once we start thinking that we're above making mistakes, that I think is a real danger spot. Just again, in your own experience, people often say that it's often through failure that we learn the most. Have you found that experience in your own leadership? Are there things that you tried and you had to kind of turn around and go, man, I never thought we'd end up like this, but I have learned something that I can take away? Have you had an experience like that?
Yeah, I probably had multiple experiences like that. You know, and really, I'm so thankful. The first posting I had when I worked with the Salvation Army, they sent me really to nowhere. There is a name of the place. It's called Williams Lake, British Columbia. But it is, it was 17 hours away from the nearest supervisor's office.
Wow.
Okay, so, I mean, no one came to visit. And we were there for 6.5 years, which is a long time to be in one spot. It was the longest time I'd ever lived anywhere in my whole life. But what happened was both my husband and I were working together, and we were both gung-ho. I mean, we were so excited to change the whole world. You know, this was our posture and our language and, you know, everything. And we just tried a lot of things. And then at the end, I remember driving away from that town, and we were just, him and I together, we were just going over all the things that we had tried. Like, we started a recovery house, and I would say that we didn't do very well at that, and I would do it totally differently today. You know what I mean? Like, we did some of the things that I think went really well are some of the multi-church, the connected and collaboration with other churches. Mm-hmm. That's some of the stuff that we're most proud of, is partnership and collaboration, which was now one of my key leadership areas, is collaboration and partnership, because that's one of the things that I saw bear so much fruit in my own experience. Anyway, there were all kinds of different things that I would say, that was not a good idea. But we were driving back away from this town. My husband and I are rehearsing all these things, and we're exhausted rehearsing what we did in 6.5 years. I mean, we just tried everything we could while we had the freedom to do it. And I remember me just, and him just saying, like, those poor people, you know, those poor people, like, they must be exhausted. And then that was its own, you know, that was its own leadership. Like my drive is so intense. Like I want to do everything yesterday, you know, like I just want to get stuff done. And I realized that I can really wear people out. Like just being aware of that and trying to be attentive to that and trying to be grace-filled in that, including myself. Like that's all my ultimate leadership lesson, of course, is that drive can also wear me out. So to really start paying attention to rhythms and healthy, sustainable practices, like those are some of the things that I champion these days as well, because that's been my big leadership lesson along the way, is that it's fine to get something beautiful done, but at the expense of people, at the expense of my own well-being and faith, probably not a good idea for sustainability.
That's so helpful. I could see a lot of those, the negative side of that in myself, that when you're driven by a vision, the task becomes everything and people become collateral in order to get the task done. I'm interested to know about the rhythms. We've spoken in other contexts about them, but not in this podcast. But I am particularly interested about, I get it for personal rhythms that you know, we as leaders need sustainable lifestyles and, you know, a spirituality that's going to help us to keep going. But I like the context of those people that we're impacting. So the wider team, the church that we're leading, the company we're trying to lead through, our drive could actually destroy people. How do we help set a good rhythm, not just personally, but corporately? Is that something that you've explored?
Yeah. So in the early days for me, one of the ways we discovered this was through the 24/7 prayer movement. We established a prayer room at the center of our work in the downtown east side of Vancouver. So it's like right in this ghetto. And we took this slum rooming house room and transformed it into this prayer room. And then we just slotted everybody in for prayer shifts, whether they liked it or not. That's the army way. And we all learned how to pray, including the leadership team. We all just figured it out. Like we had 3 hours to kill in a prayer shift three times a week. Wow. So we were prayed up. And then what we discovered is not only were we transforming, but the community was transforming. What we discovered was that things were happening exponentially faster and different and more beautifully than we could have ever done with all of us working full speed without any prayer. Yeah. And then we kind of accidentally stumbled into this rhythm, this spiritual, beautiful, sustainable rhythm that had prayer at the heart of it. And I would say that was some of the most transformational. We prayed nonstop for 3.5 years in the downtown east side and saw God do so many incredible things. And what happened was it introduced us in so many ways to just a different way, just a God-centered, a Jesus-centered way that took some of the pressure and the weight. I often talk about prayer as leverage for social justice, right? Where this thing, if we were to hold it ourselves or try to lift it ourselves, will kill us. We will be crushed under the weight of this, whatever this thing is. And you can see that happening to leaders all around the world who are working in really hard, unjust places. And real intentional prayer, and I don't just mean like lists of requests, I mean time spent with God, creates this perspective and distance and lets him bear it, lets him, and it becomes a lever that then allows you to lift weight that is way beyond what you should be able to lift, but you're not taking the brunt of that. So some of those is where we discovered sort of healthy rhythms. And then we created a few of us that were disciple makers and kingdom, you know, injustice fighters and all of these things. We got together and made a way of life called Infinitum Life. And all of those things are free, by the way, if any leaders listening to this and you just need a rhythm or a system or even just company along the way, infinitumlife.com, lots of church leaders are using it for their churches. And there's a few things that I love about this is one, it's rhythm, it's posture. So we talk about keeping Jesus at the center of our lives and living surrendered, generous, and missional lives, which I think is kingdom leadership. But the other thing that's been really refreshing about Infinitum, which is one of my big leadership, discipleship, kingdom leadership lessons, is that Jesus needs to disciple people. It's, you know, the disciples' job to be led by Jesus. And I think we were confused about this. I spent a lot of time in my ministry trying to disciple people. And my job is to help people become disciples of Jesus, to facilitate them to be discipled by Jesus. And that's, in so many ways, what Infinitum Life is trying to do is give people tools to actually follow Jesus and not be fed and, you know, led and micromanaged by one specific leader or ministry, but actually be liberated to this beautiful life that Jesus calls us to. And that's just been also burden lifting too.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not my job to disciple people. Maybe that's Jesus's job. And I just get to help him get that happened. And that little tiny shift has made a big difference in the way that I disciple people.
Excellent. So good. The Leadership Podcast is brought to you by World Vision, a global Christian humanitarian organization with over 70 years of experience working alongside communities, churches, donors, partners, and governments to help the most vulnerable children reach their full potential by tackling the root causes of poverty and injustice. When children have the love, safety, education, and physical resources they need, they are empowered with choices for the future. Choices they can use to create lasting change in their life and community. World Vision wants to help you provide opportunities for new leaders in your church and community to rise up with a sense of hope and the ability to make a difference. Visit www.wvi.org/leadership to learn more about today's guest, other episodes, and how you and your ministry can partner with World Vision. I think one of the things, and there are many things I value about you, Danielle, but this balance or connectivity between spirituality and justice, it often gets severed, so that there's a whole movement out there that's about being spiritual, but it seems to be kind of quite self-indulgent. It's just making space for yourself. It feels like another form of therapy. And then there's a kind of hard type of justice that's about fighting the fight and getting rid of injustice. And it's got no time for this kind of airy-fairy spiritual stuff. What are we doing praying when we should be out there doing that? So holding those two together is quite an art. And it's something I really value, and I will promote the Infinitum stuff because I think that's a unique set of resources to help people hold that together. Two last questions. I could talk to you all day, but I know you've got 100 million things to do. Why do you think for many people leadership doesn't have anything to do with justice? That leadership is ignorant or, I suppose, unattentive to, I don't know, a fact like, 850 million children go to sleep hungry each night around the world. That's just not on the radar of many leaders. Why do you think leadership and justice are often so disconnected?
Yeah, wow. If I could answer that question, we could solve so many problems, Krish. I think it's partly a mystery. I mean, and I think partly it's an age-old temptation for humanity to put themselves at the center of everything. So even leadership, and this gets a little tired after a while in leadership circles. Like if you do a lot of leadership development stuff, you'll read book after book after book about how to make you great.
Right.
And it just gets tired. I mean, I'm sure it must get tired even for the people writing some of those books. So again, you're saying there is this like continuum, and on one end is just this it's all about changing the world. And then on the other end is it's all about you. And I think for me, the thing that makes a difference is the person of Jesus, is a real deep dive into the person of Jesus. And if you really look at the way Jesus lived, you will discover a leader who lives for others. That is the definition of Jesus's leadership style. Everything for others, and not like at the expense. He didn't think less of himself. His humility wasn't driven by like, oh gosh, I'm terrible, I'm horrible. There's no self-loathing in Jesus. There's real, all of the qualities of leadership that we would admire, just self-assurance.
A
leader who's not driven by other people's opinions, who knows who he is, that spends time on the important things and with the right people at the right time, but who has literally got his compass directed at the benefit of others, the benefit of those who don't belong at the margin. So for me, it's just been Jesus. And it sounds so trite to say it, but I don't know how else to put it. He is the most exemplary leader I've ever seen. He's changed the world forever and ever and ever. And the more I look into the way he does what he does, what he says and who he says it to and how he lives his life, the more I'm convinced that living for others is at the center of what it means to be a Jesus follower. That's it. I mean, he even says it, right? Like in words all the time. So I don't know how people miss that. But here is the thing. I don't know how people miss that, but I also don't think that people shouldn't also be ministered to and experience that. And, I know so many people who are working on justice projects who are angry and terrible to be around. you know, who are unkind and judgmental, not to the poor, but to the rich. And you also don't really see that in Jesus either. Jesus is, something's going on, a connection to the Spirit is renewing him with hope and joy and inclusion. And those are the most attractive people to be around. So I always say that one of the things that people say the most about Mother Teresa, people who met her, they always said that they were most surprised by how joyful she was in person. And that is true of every, I mean, you go way back in church history, Francis of Assisi, you know, what defined him. And I mean, you read his stuff and the stories about his life. I mean, he was as hardcore as it gets, but he was marked by joy, you know? And I always think when I'm doing my work and I've got no joy, there's no joy in it, that judgment comes in, that I realize like, oh, I'm not doing this the Jesus way. There's another way to do this.
So helpful. Bringing us back to Jesus. You're right. It's so obvious. And yet we miss it so easily that we can edit Jesus down to suit ourselves. You know, there are different versions of Jesus that are out there in the kind of church and popular culture. He's my Che Guevara Jesus who will kind of fight justice, or he's my therapy Jesus who will kind of make me feel better. But you're right, every time we come back to the scriptures, they challenge us to see him as he really is. And everyone should feel both comforted and uncomfortable by how great he is. That's so lovely.
Chris, the only other thing I was going to say is that if you are a leader and you've been focused sort of on this personal relationship with Jesus and this connection to Jesus, and you haven't tapped into this, you know, others focused life or this bigger mission and justice thing, the other thing I would say is that the most traction for change in people's life, in my experience, happen at two specific points. One is when they encounter Jesus for themselves, and the other is when they encounter the other, the folks who don't belong, the missional impetus of the kingdom. That those two things are almost conversions in themselves. There is an awakening that happens when people learn that the invitation that they've been given is to live a life larger than their own. I mean, when people tap into that, even if they're volunteers or whatever it is, when people tap into that, it changes their capacity and their passion and their insights and their direction. And I mean, I've had to say to some volunteers, like, please stop, take a day off. Like, there is this thing that awakens in us, much like a conversion, when we encounter Jesus and we're like, whoa, you know, wow, this is different than I thought. The same thing happens when we encounter mission. In its purest form, is there something that's unlocked within us? Because we were designed to do this, of course. So I think if you're a leader, this is also kind of a secret sauce for motivation and for passion and for unlocking gifts in people.
Listening to Daniel Strickland is incredibly inspiring. I think back to that courtroom where the judge noticed in Danielle a leadership gift and called it out. What a strange place to discover that you're called to be a leader. What an incredible vision for a judge to see beyond all the trouble that Danielle was in and to see the treasure there instead. I wonder, as we reflect on this leadership opportunity, are there others around you that you spot as leaders, that you can name and call out their leadership gifting and encourage them to step forward no matter what situation they're in, no matter how awkward or messy their lives currently are? Can we be those that inspire a leadership in others? I'm Chris Kandoya, and this is the Leadership Podcast. Join us next time as we explore new ways that we can move our leadership up a gear and make a positive impact in the world. Thanks for listening.